What if I told you that by ignoring 40% of the world's stock market value, you might be missing out on some great growth opportunities? If you were to guess what asset class is the best performer year to date in 2025, what would be your best guess? Today we're going to talk about that asset class and whether it belongs in your investment portfolio. So stay tuned for this episode. It might just be the key to unlocking your financial future. So for the sake of time, let's dive right into it. Welcome back to the Wealth Decisions Podcast, and for any current listeners as well as all you new listeners out there. Today we're going to talk about something I think is really important, and it's often overlooked in many investors' portfolios. And it's the asset class that a lot of advisors recommend having some exposure to, and that's developed international markets. And trust me, this could be the missing piece in your investment strategy. The last 15 years have been a period of time where the U.S. markets have dominated the world performance. But that's very rare that a particular part of the world outperforms for that period of time. The average period of time of outperformance is somewhere around 7 years. Now, you might be thinking, Brian, why should I care about markets outside the U.S.? Well, let me share just three compelling reasons. First, we talk about this all the time, and that's diversification. When you invest only in the U.S. markets, you're essentially putting all your eggs in one part of the world. Think about companies like Toyota, Samsung, Nestle. These are powerhouse companies that aren't listed on any of the U.S. stock exchanges. Second, different markets move in different cycles. When the U.S. market is underperforming, developed international markets might be experiencing growth. For example, during the lost decade of 2000 to 2009, when U.S. stocks delivered negative returns, international developed markets actually provided positive returns to investors who were properly diversified. And third, this is the most crucial one because it's very relevant right now. And it's all about valuation. Right now, many developed international markets are trading at lower valuations compared to U.S. stocks. And I'll dive into that a little bit more in this episode. It's like getting a discount on quality companies just because they're headquartered in a different country. So let's just dive into the U.S. history of the markets versus international markets. And what we see when we look at the data is a clear pattern of leadership rotation that spans back decades. In the 1970s and early 80s, international markets, particularly Japan and Europe, had better returns compared to the U.S. markets. The Japanese market was booming at that time as the country was kind of rebuilding their industrial base. And many international investors who recognized this opportunity saw tremendous growth. The 1990s told, you know, a different story. The U.S. experienced the dot-com boom, and American tech companies dominated returns. But Japan entered what became known as its lost decade after its asset bubble burst. Then came the period from 2000 to 2010, often called the lost decade for U.S. stocks. And during this time, the S&P actually produced negative returns when adjusted for inflation. But international developed markets, particularly resource-rich countries like Australia and Canada and Europe, outperformed significantly. And then from 2010 to 2023, we saw the U.S. markets led by large technology companies significantly outperform international. Now, when you look at this period from about 2010 till today, this has been one of the longest periods of U.S. outperformance in modern financial history. You can go back all the way to the 70s, and there's never been a period that has been this strong for the U.S. But what's crucial really to understand is there's no single market outperforms indefinitely. The average leadership cycle historically kind of lasts about 7 years and before starting to reverse. And based on this pattern alone, international markets could be poised for a period of outperformance. When I asked the question, if you were to guess what asset class is the best performer year to date, and asked you what your best guess would be, maybe you said international. International markets are up about 7% year to date versus the U.S. markets, which are flat or down, depending on what index you look at. But let's just talk a little bit about valuations. And this is what presents a very compelling case for having some international exposure in your portfolio. As of early 2025, developed international markets trade at approximately 13 times forward earnings, while the U.S. market trades at about 22 times forward earnings. So what does that mean in plain English? You know, you're paying roughly 40 to 50% more for each dollar of earnings when you invest in U.S. companies compared to similar companies in international developed markets. So that's like choosing to pay $1.50 for something that cost $1 somewhere else. International markets also typically offer higher dividend yields. The S&P 500 yields less than 1.5%, while many developed international markets offer yields closer to 3% or higher. That's double the income for investors seeking some type of cash flow, especially if you're approaching retirement. So let's just look at a hypothetical example. You know, imagine two investors, Mike and Jessica. They both started with $100,000 in 2000. Mike invested everything in the U.S., while Jessica split her portfolio 60-40 between U.S. and developed international markets. During the 2000 to 2010 period, Mike's all U.S. portfolio actually lost value, while Jessica's diversified approach would have actually generated positive returns. But during 2010 to 2023, Mike's portfolio would have outperformed because the U.S. markets dominated during that period of time. But over the entire 23-year period, their returns would have been surprisingly similar, with Jessica just experiencing less volatility along the way. And this really demonstrates why it's important to have some global diversification. You get a little bit smoother returns and you actually reduce your risk, and that comes from holding less correlated assets. Now, we're in a global synchronized economy. When the financial crisis hit, everything went down. Sometimes having international doesn't help you in the short term, but over the long term, having exposure to international is going to typically reduce your volatility and give you a better chance to have a smoother ride with your portfolio to reach your long-term goals. Now, I know what some of you might be thinking. You know, the U.S. has outperformed international markets for a long period of time, and there's a reason for that. But that's exactly why this conversation is so important right now. Markets are cyclical, and history shows that leadership between U.S. and international markets typically rotate, really every 3 to 4 years. And we've had this long period where U.S. has outperformed. So we've started to see this international story start to emerge because international markets are up, emerging markets are up year to date, while the U.S. market is down. Is this a long-term trend? But just based upon valuations and the fact that markets do move in cycles, I think international investments are going to be really important in a diversified portfolio over the next 3 to 5 years. Just remember this key principle. The goal isn't to predict which market will outperform next year. The goal is to build a resilient portfolio that can capture growth opportunities all over the globe, wherever they might emerge. So how can you put this knowledge into action? Now, here's your five-step implementation plan. First of all, do a portfolio review. Check your current international exposure. Log into your investment accounts and look for funds with international or EAFE or developed markets in their names. Calculate what percentage of your portfolio that those types of investments represent. Figure out your target allocation. You know, consider allocating somewhere between 20 to 40% of your portfolio to developed international markets. The exact percentage really depends on your risk tolerance and investment timeline, but for most of my clients, I typically recommend starting with around 15 to 20% and adjusting that based on their specific situation. And this would be just for developed international markets. We'll talk a little bit about emerging markets next week. You want to think also about country and region diversification. Within your international allocation, make sure you have exposure to various regions. You know, a well-diversified international portfolio is going to include, you know, European markets, Asia Pacific markets like Japan, Australia, and Singapore, and even some Canadian markets. Each region has unique economic drivers and industrial types of strengths. If you use a good broad-based international fund, you're automatically going to get exposure to all parts of the world. And it's that the job of that international fund manager or whatever ETF you might be buying to allocate that as they see fit. And then think about if you're just starting to build international exposure, consider maybe dollar cost averaging into these markets over 6 to 12 months rather than making one large move. You know, start with 5%, then move it up to 10%, eventually trying to be landing on somewhere between 15 to 25% of your portfolio. Before we wrap up, let me address some of the common concerns I hear about international investing. Number one is currency risk. And this is a valid concern because it's important to understand that, you know, currency fluctuations can work both ways. When the US dollar weakens, your international investments actually benefit from the exchange rate. Also, companies in developed markets are multinational businesses with natural kind of currency hedges built into their operations. The second one I hear quite a bit is, aren't international markets riskier? Some emerging markets do carry additional political and economic risks, but developed markets like Germany, Australia, and Canada have pretty robust regulatory frameworks similar to the US. And many international blue chip companies have been in business for centuries and have weathered numerous economic cycles. And the third thing I hear quite a bit is, what about geopolitical concerns? You know, every region has its challenges, and Europe has energy dependencies. Japan faces some demographic kind of headwinds, and the U.S. has its own political divisions, as we know. The key is to diversify across regions so no single, you know, geopolitical issue can derail your entire portfolio. So before we wrap up, here's your action item for this week. Take 15 minutes to review your portfolio's international exposure. If it's below 20%, consider gradually increasing it through the next couple quarters. Always remember, successful investing isn't about predicting which market will outperform next quarter or even next year. It's about building a resilient portfolio that can weather any market condition and capture opportunities globally. You know, history has repeatedly shown that market leadership rotates, and the pendulum of performance between the U.S. and international markets eventually swings back. The question isn't if international markets will have their day again, but when, and whether your portfolio will be positioned to benefit when they do. So that's it for today's episode. Do you own developed markets in your portfolio? Would love if you pre-ordered my new book, Momentous Decisions, 7 Steps to Better Health, More Wealth, and a Richer Life. This has been a long lifetime goal of mine to put out a book. It's everything I've learned about habit change, health, wealth, and life, all wrapped up in one book with a 7-step plan to help you live a life closer to exceptional. If you'd like to pick up a copy of the book, you can go to momentouswealthadvisors.com/book. And at the bottom of that page, there'll be a pre-order link, and it'll be out sometime in early August. And if you like this episode, please rate the episode, make some comments, and hit the notification bell to get updated on future Wealth Decision podcasts. And please, if you could, share it with a family member or a friend. My goal with the Wealth Decisions podcast is to reach over 100,000 people by the end of the year in the Twin Cities and beyond, so that people can make better wealth decisions to live a richer life. If you'd like to schedule a discovery call with me, you can go to my website at momentouswealthadvisors.com, and I'll spend some time to get to know you a little bit and find out if I might be able to steer you in the right direction or help you with your financial future. And once again, thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.